It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delphiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
All eyes on Dorian. Good afternoon. Welcome aboard. The Cat 2 hurricane is hugging the Atlantic coast on a march toward the Carolinas after completely obliterating the Bahamas.
Overwhelmed with sadness. It looks like 90% of the homes are gone.
That is the reality today in the battered Bahamas. Lee Rigby is a hurricane relief specialist there. Nikki Batiste on the island of Nassau.
Resident from Abaco Island told a local newspaper here they reached her via phone that she'd seen water as high as basketball hoops, if you can imagine that. And other residents, many residents, actually, their water had risen so high in their homes that they were seeking safety in their ceiling.
The storm has weakened, but it has also widened as it spins upward from central Florida. Meteorologist David Parkinson.
It will start to get a move on. So by this evening, it will be past the Florida-Georgia line as a Category 2. It maintains Category 2 status straight into Thursday, where it makes its closest brush with the South Carolina and North Carolina coast.
North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper.
Do not try to ride it out. You're putting your life at risk, and you're also putting at risk the lives of first responders who may have to rescue you.
Coastal Carolina bracing for a foot of rain, a storm surge of 10 feet. Meteorologist Bill Cairns is standing by in Savannah, Georgia.
Right now it's predicted to be the third highest water level ever recorded in Savannah, going back to the 1940s.
Farther south, 10,000 homes completely destroyed in the Bahamas. The devastation, hard to put into words there. Correspondent David Begna.
The extent of Dorian's destruction across the northern Bahamas is immense. The damage stretches for miles. Entire neighborhoods flattened. Homes shredded. Shipping containers and boats hurled inland. People have been using boats and jet skis, even inflatable toys, to ferry other people to safety.
David Begno in the Bahamas today, where the official death toll is 7, expected to go much higher. This is the most powerful storm ever to hit the Bahamas. The island pounded with winds in excess of 185 miles per hour. Other news today, Walmart is getting out of handgun sales. The retail giant will also stop selling the ammo used in handguns, as well as the bullets for military-style rifles. Walmart shoppers weighing in.
What's really needed is the banning of assault weapon sales, not just the ammo, but at least it's a start.
The gun control laws don't work because it's a matter of the people that are doing it.
The gun owner there says because of Walmart's bullet ban, he will be taking his business elsewhere.
I have done some shopping at Walmart. Just because of their attitude, I maybe do less of it there. There are other places that sell stuff.
But others argue Walmart is simply acting responsibly.
Doing nothing hasn't helped us yet. So the more we do nothing, the less we accomplish.
The announcement comes a month after a gunman killed over 20 people at a Walmart in Texas. Just 5 survivors to report from that deadly dive boat fire off the coast of Southern California. All of the survivors were crew members aboard the Conception. Correspondent Miguel Almagar.
This fire exploded so quickly there was very little they could do. And in fact, the Good Samaritan that picked up those crew members said the crew told them they tried to reach the passengers below, but they were simply overcome by flames. They said they had no other choice but to jump in the water.
34 people perished while on a scuba diving expedition. They were asleep below deck when the flames broke out. Sherry McDonough lost her 25-year-old daughter.
The thing that's kind of holding me together is that she is left this world doing something that she loves.
The scuba diving boat sits at the bottom of the Pacific, 30 miles off the coast of Santa Barbara. Fire officials yet to release a cause for that deadly disaster. YouTube is paying big time for violating youth privacy laws.
Google will pay $170 million to settle allegations its video site YouTube collected the personal information of children without their parents' consent. Google was fined $136 million by the Federal Trade Trade Commission, and the company will pay an additional $34 million to resolve similar allegations with New York State.
Mike Gracia reporting the Defense Department has given President Trump the go-ahead to use more than $3.5 billion in military funds to build the border wall. That money will be diverted from more than 100 military construction projects here at home and overseas. Overseas today, Hong Kong leaders have shelved a controversial new policy that would have allowed extradition of criminal suspects to mainland China. Chief Executive Carrie Lam.
The government will formally withdraw the bill in order to fully allay public concerns.
This measure is what triggered weeks of violent protests in Hong Kong. Pope Francis has begun his historic tour of Africa. First stop on the seven-day visit, Mozambique, where the Pope's agenda includes addressing so-called climate change. Francis will also be spending most of his trip in Mozambique and Madagascar, which have been hit hard by deforestation. Britain's prime minister licking his political wounds after a Brexit setback.
The sound of Britain's parliament a little while ago.
We have seized back control from a prime minister who is behaving like a dictator more than a Democrat.
Lawmakers last night defied the pro-Brexit populist Boris Johnson and will vote today on blocking his bid to leave Europe October 31st without a deal if necessary. But Johnson says he's prepared to put all their jobs on the line by calling new elections if they pass that bill. Once again, Britain approaching a toxic paralysis over Brexit. Vicky Barker, London.
Also from Britain, a medical mystery to report today. Teenager who's eaten pretty much only junk food his entire life suffered partial blindness and hearing loss. His doctors blame his diet, say the effects could be reversed with nutritional changes. Michigan's become the first state in these United States to ban e-cigarettes from flavors that are borrowed at the candy store.
There are 13-year-olds that are vaping Fruit Loops right now that are doing lifelong damage.
Governor Gretchen Whitmer, health officials in Illinois, meantime, investigating the first vaping-related fatality anywhere in America. Thinking of moving for retirement? Some suggestions next from correspondent Gary Dunn.
Leading the list of best and worst places to retire?
Imagine Orlando.
Followed by Tampa, Scottsdale, Arizona, Charleston, South Carolina, and Miami. WalletHub considered such factors as quality of life, affordability, leisure activities, and health care. At the bottom of the list, Warwick, Rhode Island, Bridgeport, Connecticut, and last, Stockton, California.
That's Gary Nunn reporting. Still to come on the Noon Report, efforts continue to make football safer. Public school enrollment down, and the school district that's banning cell phones.
Good afternoon. We're still tracking a cold front bringing a couple of showers and thunderstorms along parts of the I-81 corridor in our region, but behind the front, well, the weather looks nice. Fresh breezes, clearing skies, and prospects for a nice cool night and a bright sunny day tomorrow. I'll be back. We'll put this all together in forecast form. A few words about Dorian as well coming up in 10 minutes.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thank you, Kevin. Checking the headlines from New York and Pennsylvania today. News where you live. Where have all the kids gone? Public school enrollment down in New York. New statistics today show the number of kids attending public school the lowest it's been in 30 years. Back in 1990, there were nearly 3 million children attending public school in New York. Today, that number is closer to 2.5 million statewide, a decrease of 10% over 10 years, or 30 years, I should say. A Buffalo area school district is banning cell phones in the classroom. Family Life's Tracy Lynn.
A new school rule at Maryvale Central in Cheektowaga means students must part ways with their cell phones during the school day. Math teacher Jamie Mitchell says smartphones are too much of a distraction.
They always feel the need to be in the loop with one another. They just want to talk to each other all the time. And if there's a conversation happening with a group of kids, they feel insecure and not knowing what they're talking about.
The Maryvale School Board approved the cell phone ban over the summer. It includes an agreement that says students need to keep their personal electronic devices in their lockers during the entire school day. Students will be allowed to check their phones between classes. Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you very much, Tracy. The University of Pennsylvania is opening up a new research center to help doctors figure out which treatment options work best for opioid addicts. This technology involves the use of PET scans to peer inside the brains of patients. Pennsylvania has one of the highest death rates from drug addiction anywhere in the country. Cruising in the passing lane, quite annoying for motorists. Well, in New York, it could soon be against the law.
State Senator Joseph Grifo has introduced legislation that would make it a traffic violation for a motorist to drive in the left lane if they don't pass another vehicle after a mile and a half. The legislation says coasting poses a safety risk to other drivers, disrupts the flow of traffic, and can lead to road rage. It's unclear how this legislation would be enforced. Bill Price, Family Life News.
All right, Bill, former Pennsylvania Congressman Lou Barletta is not going to run for elective office again. Instead, he will consult others who do. The 63-year-old Republican has opened a consulting firm that will focus on political campaigns and government affairs. Barletta served 8 years in Congress. New York Congressman Tom Reed got sucked into the gun control debate last night at a town hall meeting in Ithaca. It was a raucous affair. Reed says banning guns is divisive, but there are some things that Congress can do right now to reduce gun-related deaths.
Trying to find the WHO solutions. How do we go after the people that are committing these crimes and make sure that the risk that they represent is mitigated?
In short, Reed says it's a who, not a what debate when it comes to gun control. Who, not what. Activist Christian Haynes.
Lawmakers just can't ignore it. They can't move on because every time that they try to move on or try to move on to the next issue, another shooting takes place.
Congress set to consider background checks, red flag laws, and other gun control measures next week. Pennsylvania's governor heads overseas next week. Family Life's Terry Diener.
Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf will travel to Lithuania and Poland next week to meet with Pennsylvania National Guard members deployed to both countries and meet with Lithuanian government and business leaders. He'll also visit the Auschwitz-Birkenau Memorial to memorialize the victims of the October 2018 anti-Semitic attack on the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. Currently, there are nearly 600 troops stationed in Lithuania and Poland. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. Pennsylvania is getting more than $2 million from the Centers for Disease Control to study maternal deaths. Pregnancy-associated fatalities are on the rise in the Commonwealth. African-American women, 3 times more likely to die during or after a pregnancy than white women. Tackle football programs throughout New York will now have to give parents information about concussions. Scott Pringle continues our coverage.
Well, this is now mandatory for programs run by schools and leagues for children. Governor Cuomo signed the bill, and he says medical research on the long-term effects of concussions and subconcussive hits continues to evolve, and therefore, he says parents should be given the up-to-date information that will help with their decision-making and encourage best practices on the field. The law requires tackle football programs to post concussion information on the organization's website. Scott Pringle, New York.
Okay, Scott, thank you very much. Coaches, parents, and players alike all sounding off on this new law.
I think that's like one of the most important things about football is just always being safe.
Jack Kander plays football at Rush Henrietta near Rochester. The school's athletic director is Tom Stewart. He hopes this new law does not keep kids from playing football.
My only concern would be so that it's not really like a scare tactic, you know, really informing parents so they can make informed decisions.
A lot of smaller schools in New York have had to combine with nearby districts in order to field football teams. Other schools opting for 8-man squads because fewer kids today are playing the sport over safety concerns.
From the time they start playing football, it's all about getting the head out of the way, using your shoulders.
That's Jason Collins, head coach at Rush Henrietta. He says football is no more dangerous than any other contact sport.
And I will say from contact in my 4 years as a head coach, maybe one concussion in a game over those 4 years.
Collins says he hopes this law, which takes effect in 90 days, does not mean fewer kids playing football. Speaking of football, there is more news to report on that front today. Sonny's got your 2-minute drill next in sports.
Yeah, we start with breaking news. Earlier this morning, the Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott have agreed to a $90 million 6-year contract extension, making him the NFL's highest paid running back, ending a holdout that lasted the entire preseason. The 100th season of the NFL kicks off tomorrow, the Bears against the Packers. At Flushing Meadows, Serena Williams into the U.S. Open semifinals. Breezing by 18th-seeded Quang Wong of China, 6-1-6-love in just 44 minutes. An injured Roger Federer blew a 2-sets-to-1 lead and lost in 5 to Bulgaria's Grigor Dimitrov in the men's quarters. Boy, last night, the Mets bottom of the 9th inning with a 10-4 lead over the Nationals. The Nats able to cut it within 2. Then Kurt Suzuki!
See you later! The Nats have won it!
Yeah, 3-run homer. That's the largest comeback in club history. Ouch, says Mickey Callaway.
Hey, keep your head up. You know, it's a tough one. So, yeah, it's a little tougher than some others.
In Cincinnati, Bryce Harper drove in his 100th run of the season. The Phillies beat the Reds 6-2. Gabe Kapler had it.
Everybody contributed, and I think that's really important. So it was a real team victory on a night when he had a personal accolade.
Aaron Boone happy for the Yanks as James Paxton struck out 12 over 7 innings of one-hit shutout ball. Yanks routed the Rangers 10-1.
Really good to see him continue to build on what's been a lot of momentum for him here in the second
Miguel
half.
Miguel Sano's 2-run homer in the 5th held up. Twins beat the Red Sox 6-5. Rocco Baldelli.
Big swing by Rafi to get us back in the game. You know, Benny stayed on a fastball going the other way. We did everything possible in the last, you know, we'll take our chances with Mookie and Rafi. We made a scoring position. It just didn't happen. You know, Rodgers made some good pitch and he got out.
In Cleveland, White Sox beat the Indians 6-5. The Tribes still have the second American League wild card, and the Pirates fall to the Marlins 5-4. In extras, for Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this busy Wednesday, what drives today's mass shooters? We'll take a closer look with Chris Anderson on Real Answers coming up. Plus, a backyard beef in Western Australia. And back to school shopping is real big business. Our own Jeremy Miller will take a closer look at that. After this,
we're used to challenges to religious freedom coming from the halls of Congress, the State House, or the courtroom. We'd better be looking at the corporate boardroom as well. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Usually, infringements on religious freedom come from the government, legislatures, regulatory agencies, local agents of inquisition, like the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. But emerging and serious threats to religious freedom are also coming from the private sector. An obvious example is the workplace. Now, I've talked for months now that Christians need a theology of getting fired. You might be great at your job, and you should be as a Christian, but you might also face pressure to affirm and support your employer's political agenda, one that has little to do with the company's business model or strategic goals. Many companies today face an incredible amount of pressure by outside advocacy groups, especially pro-LGBT organizations. The influence of these groups, especially the Human Rights Coalition, is incredible, and they reach well beyond the workplace. Recently, I hosted a Colson Center webinar with Jeremy Tedesco of the Alliance Defending Freedom to discuss the influence of these LGBT advocacy groups, including new attempts to restrict the ability of religious groups to raise money. The main strategy comes by weaponizing so-called hate group lists. Once groups like ADF are designated as hate groups by groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center, corporations are then pressured to cut ties with any and all organizations that bear that scarlet H. Consider the Amazon Smile program. When participants in the program make a purchase on Amazon, 0.5% of the price of their purchase can be designated as a donation to the charity of their choice. 0.5% might not sound like much, but as of last fall, Amazon had donated more than $100 million to eligible charities through the Smile program. In response to outside pressure, Amazon now excludes any organization designated as a hate group from the program. So, ADF, the Family Research Council, and others are barred from Amazon Smile. And that's a relatively minor example. But as Tedesco told us on the webinar, activists and their corporate allies have even more effective strategies to accomplish their goals. For example, companies that process credit card payments are also pressured from doing business with anyone deemed a hate group, whether they really are or not. Some of our close ministry friends, in fact, have been refused services. If a ministry you love and support cannot find someone to process their credit card donations, well, that's a huge blow. A new strategy now is to target donor advised funds. funds. These funds manage charitable donations on behalf of families, individuals, and organizations. They carry along specific tax benefits and are offered by most of the major wealth management organizations. Essentially, they allow a donation to be made now with the tax deduction, but distributed later according to the wishes of the donor. What many people who use donor advised funds fail to realize is that they actually surrender ownership of the assets that they donate. And so they essentially become advisors to how the funds will be used. And now there's a move afoot to persuade those who offer the funds to exclude hate groups from receiving donations. So all it would take would be a stroke of a pen, and suddenly the donor couldn't designate his funds to the group that he wants anymore. Thankfully, there are Christian-based donor advised funds through groups whose Christian worldview lines up with those of Orthodox faith. If you carry a donor advised fund with someone else, it might be time to consider transferring to these providers. Two of them, National Christian Foundation and Waterstone, joined Tedesco and me on the webinar. And you can listen to a recording of that webinar by coming to our website, breakpoint.org. That's breakpoint.org. Look, these challenges are a moving target, and they're becoming more serious and more challenging day by day. I don't know if you noticed, but there were a whole lot more rainbow flags flying by corporations during Pride Month this year. Christians need to know that this new woke capitalism poses an even bigger threat to religious freedom than anything that's currently coming out of the halls of government. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
We are coming up on 20 past the hour. Let's take it outside next. Check the forecast with Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your family life weather forecast for the Twin Tiers. There'll be another shower or a thunderstorm in some areas this afternoon, even as clouds break for some sunshine at times. It'll be breezy on occasion, the high 72 to 77, but skies will clear by the end of the day. On our way to a clear to partly cloudy cool night tonight, some locally dense fog will form in the valleys overnight. The low 50 on the hilltops in the cities, 40s in the rural valleys. Tomorrow, after a foggy start, mostly sunny and pleasant with a high near 70.
All right, Kevin Williams, the weather authority, as we like to refer to him around these here parts. Thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Great to have you with us today. A recap of our top story this Wednesday afternoon, the fourth day of September. Hurricane Dorian is now on the move, could make landfall somewhere in the Carolinas sometime tomorrow.
Hunker down and batten down the hatches and be ready.
That is the mayor of Charleston, South Carolina, which is bracing for a damage blow, Governor Henry McMaster.
South Carolina is still in the path of what is a very destructive and deadly storm. If you are in the evacuation zones, the time to leave is now.
Florida dodged a direct hit but is still feeling the effects of the storm. New Smyrna Beach Mayor Russ Owen.
This isn't our first storm, won't be our last storm, but we're going to get through this.
Dorian, less than 90 miles off the coast of Daytona Beach, moving northward at less than 10 miles an hour. Meteorologist David Parkinson.
Worst weather is probably going to be in places from Jacksonville up towards Savannah, Georgia, as the storm surge increases in that area. And then by the time we get to Thursday morning, it's South Carolina that's in the bullseye.
At least seven deaths blamed on the storm in the Bahamas. Howard Armstrong lost his wife when his home was swallowed by the ocean.
She was standing on top of the kitchen cabinets until they disintegrated. And then I kept with her, and then she just drowned on me.
10,000 homes at least destroyed to the Bahamas. Dorian, the worst storm ever to hit the island.
The United Nations estimates 60,000 people in the Bahamas have had their homes flooded and are in need of food and water. 60,000 people. The Red Cross estimates nearly 99% of people living in Grand Bahama and Abaco Islands are in need of some kind of assistance. Food, water, something.
Correspondent David Begno. The search is over in the dive boat disaster off the coast of Southern California. 34 people died when their scuba diving boat caught fire.
The National Transportation Safety Board has started its investigation. Board member Jennifer Homendy.
I am 100% confident that our investigators will determine the cause of this fire.
As for the victims, we are learning more about who was on board. It included a family of five from Northern California, a father, his wife, three daughters. The trip was in part to celebrate the father's birthday. Then there is the story of a man who was supposed to be on board, Dave Scheckler, but wasn't. His thoughts are with the victims.
The horror of what it must have been like
for those on board and now what the families are going through.
Steve Futterman, Santa Barbara, California.
Just days after the latest mass shooting, Walmart says it's going to stop selling ammo for handguns and the bullets used in military-style weapons. This customer says...
I'm happy they're actually doing something, but I don't know if it's going to solve the issue entirely, so we'll see.
Others argue the nation's number one retailer is caving to pressure from gun control activists.
Within hours of making the announcement, the NRA tweeted, it is shameful to see Walmart succumb to the pressures of the anti-gun elites. Lines at Walmart will soon be replaced by lines at other retailers who are more supportive of America's fundamental freedom.
Correspondent Maria Villarreal. A new report from the National Retail Federation shows families on average spend about $700 on back-to-school shopping this year.
Yeah, it's a big bill, and about 80% of it will go toward clothing, with shoes being the big ticket item. Last minute shoppers will find plenty of sales in stores. The Retail Federation said that unlike holiday shopping, kids actually influence 2 out of every 3 back to school purchases their parents make. That's why more than half of parents say they do the majority of their school shopping in retail stores and malls. Now, a number of businesses and nonprofit groups hold back to school drives to collect school supplies for families in need. You can check with your local school district to find out how you can take part. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thanks, Jeremy. A group of faculty members at the University of Kansas is calling for the removal of a Chick-fil-A on campus. They say the popular restaurant is a bastion of bigotry that makes some students feel unsafe. The university's housed a Chick-fil-A in the basement of Wesco Hall for 15 years, but this year, the Chick-fil-A was moved to a more prominent location, the Student Union Center. Several students at the University of Kansas launching a petition drive to save their Chick-fil-A. An Oklahoma boy selling his toys to raise money for his uncle's funeral. 10-year-old Daniel Crace and his uncle Brian were inseparable, according to Daniel's grandmother. She says they loved to play basketball.
They was basketball players. They was game players. They was everything.
Daniel's uncle died suddenly of a heart attack, and his nephew is going all out to help pay for the funeral.
I said, Nanny, I want to raise money for my Uncle Brian. And I said, baby, I don't know how to do that. He said, I do.
Daniel's grandma says his compassion is contagious.
It made my heart feel good because I know that I raised my baby the right way.
How about that? The little boy sold his toys at a local garage sale to pay for his uncle's funeral. It's 25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Chris Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Chris Anderson. And today, we're just having a very candid and sobering conversation about mass shootings. And Chris, I know this is a very hard topic, but it's good for us to keep an open dialogue.
It really is, Brandon, and this is one of those topics that we have addressed in the past. But today, to just look very specifically at one element that many, not all, but many of these incidents have in common, and that is the demographics of the shooters.
And Chris, it's hard not to notice so many of these shooters are young white males. So let's get right to the question. What do you believe is contributing to this?
First of all, I just want to simply say that I'm not claiming to have all the answers to this, but simply sharing some thoughts that I believe are contributing to these situations as a whole, and possibly some explanations as to why this trend seems to be more with white males. Something that we started to see in popular culture, Hollywood, is that back in the 60s and ever since, we started to see this shift in the entertainment industry where males in sitcoms and other shows and even TV dramas were made out to look very incompetent or not being true leaders of the family or being substandard. And for example, there was a popular sitcom you may remember. It was called Married with Children, where the lead role or the father in the house was not something you'd really want your children to emulate. But this trend in Hollywood is really a manifestation of, I would say, like a larger shift away from biblical values, of strong family values. And it suddenly, or maybe not so suddenly, has become a blame game where all of society's ills are being completely blamed on men, to the point now where we have this term called toxic masculinity, which we've addressed in previous editions of Real Answers. So again, that's where men that want to be protectors and providers and really be who God made them to be are now targets of persecution in society, especially Caucasian males, due to the history of what we've seen in this country with the horrible issues of slavery and racism that we've had. So I think that's a real core trend as to why I think young males, in particular white males, are being increasingly marginalized in our society.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that there's almost a society-wide identity crisis in our men.
Brandon, that's actually a really great way to encapsulate it. Today's boys are growing up in a culture that is telling them to be softer, to be very tame, to not be the thing that God may want them to be. So in a nutshell, we're seeing an increasingly blatant rejection of God and Christian values, and this is a consequence of it. Our boys and our future men are not feeling accepted for who they are, who God made them to be. And then again, the breakdown of the family and society's attempts at redefining family and gender roles is also contributing to the confusion. So we're not sure how to react, and even the church is caught in the middle of this. We're not really sure how to confront this trend in our society.
Even though you said you don't believe you have the answers for this, what can families do that want to make sure their young men are able to maintain or build a positive image?
It's important for families to embrace the God-given differences between men and women and not automatically slap a negative label on that as society wants us to do. We have differences. God created us as man and as woman, and we need to look at that as a very good thing, and both being made in the image of God. So being in a solid Christian fellowship, a Bible-believing church, will help to bring balance to that. For families that may not have a father in the home, our churches can help fill the gap by recognizing this, and for strong men leaders in the church to stand up and maybe stand in the gap for families that don't have fathers in the house. And there are some ministries dedicated to the raising of men to be healthy, godly leaders. So parents also need to take a very direct role in helping their preteen children, you know, the 10, 11, and 12-year-olds, once they start having to deal with some of these issues, to understand what they're going to face in school, and especially in college settings. Okay, this is really a problem in college. And obviously, Brandon, I think we'll have more on those topics in other segments of Real Answers.
You've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Chris Anderson. It airs Wednesdays during the Noon Report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Chris Anderson.
Tough but necessary topics. Thank you, guys. As always, Real Answers comes your way Wednesdays during the Noon Report or online anytime, fln.org/news.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Hurricane Dorian, although not the storm it was intensity-wise on Sunday, continues to menace the southeast coast of the United States. Here, we're looking not at any discernible impact from Dorian, but the arrival of a cold front today, bringing the showers and storms we've seen and the clearing skies that follow. High pressure then sets us up for a cool, partly cloudy night tonight and a bright day tomorrow. For this afternoon, any showers and thunderstorms across central New York and central and eastern Pennsylvania exiting. Otherwise, a mix of clouds and sunshine and breezy. High temperatures 70s to near 80. Tonight, partly cloudy and cool, areas of fog will form. Low temperatures mid-40s to the mid-50s. Mostly sunny tomorrow, the high in the low 70s. Clouds increasing again on Friday with high temperatures in the mid-60s to the middle 70s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Finally at noon, backyard beef from the land down under. A vegan woman from Australia suing her neighbors for their meat-filled backyard barbecues. We're not kidding. Cilla Carden took her lawsuit all the way to the Supreme Court of Australia, where she's accused her neighbors of intentionally being a nuisance.
They've put it so you smell fish. All I smell is fish. It's deliberate. That's what I said to the court. It's deliberate.
Carden complains the backyard barbecues fill her property with carnivorous smells and smoke. But that's not all. She also says about her neighbor's kids playing basketball. That's offensive, too.
And their kids with their basketballs, just banging and vibrates this part of the house. It's been devastating. It's been turmoil. There's been unrest. I haven't been able to sleep.
Sounds like a real fun neighbor, doesn't she? Well, lower courts have already thrown out Carden's case, saying the woman's neighbors are simply living. But that's not stopping Cilla Carden. She's filed nearly 600 pages of complaints and documents, plans to continue her legal battle until she finally gets some peace and quiet. Good luck with that. That's the world we live in. Wednesday, September 4th. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.